Bonnie and Friends. Bonnie Simon. Jacaranda FM.
You make a fantastic decision as an umpire and it's just part of your job. You make a bad decision and you are the worst thing on that field. So, you know, it's a tough job and, you know, I take my hats off. And I think, you know, to be fair, I agree with what he says there that, you know, umpires don't get the respect of what they deserve nowadays, especially at the lower levels. You know, people must still remember that, you know, they are only human and they can make mistakes and they don't do it on purpose. And, you know, they should get a bit more respect.
But also in the old days, no TMO. So they had one decision to make and everybody just went, okay, that's it. He's got one chance at that umpire, right? And, yeah. And I know if you bowl as well and you know, he is out, you know that. And the umpire says, no, he's not. Or the other way around. I mean, how do you feel about that? That decision without going crazy and attacking the umpire.
It is tough because in that moment, you know, it's a competitive sport and you've got him out and the umpire turns you down. And, you know, sometimes you do get a bit hot headed and you might say something that you don't mean, you actually regret afterwards. But, you know, I found, to be honest, that the amount of times that an umpire makes a decision against you, he'll make one for you also. You know, so don't always remember the unlucky ones. Remember the lucky ones that you got also.
I love these new wickets, the lights flash. I mean, who came up with that idea? They should do it with when you play at Loftus against the Sharks. They don't need a TMO because that guy was useless. They should do that with the poles. So if the ball goes over, the poles flash. It's just an idea, you know. Or when they kick the ball out the line, a red light should flash. Then they'll know exactly where to stand with the flag because they always get it wrong, don't they?
Exactly. You got in tennis, you got the service line technology. Yeah. When the ball's there, it beeps. You know, I've always said, like in cricket or in, you know, like if the ball's out or if you overstep with a no ball, why can't they bring in that technology? You know, people demand perfection nowadays, so I'm sure someone can do something with that.
Let's have a look here. Ufen David, the management from the Titans and the CEO there and the management of the Titans, are you enjoying it there? Have you guys got a good vibe there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not just going to say this now because, you know, it's my home team and I've always just been there, but, you know, we really have fantastic support staff. You know, the CEO is a new CEO by us, Jock Fall. He's been there for 2-3 years now and, you know, he's been fantastic. Just a lot of new initiatives and, you know, it's difficult with cricket now because the cloud attendance, everything has been that good over the past few years. So you've got to find other ways to try and make income also. And he's been fantastic with his business ventures and everything. And, you know, and then our coach, our assistant coach, support staff, fitness trainer, physios, everyone's just, you know, such an awesome vibe. And you do, you know, we always, you know, hashtag Titans family and all of that stuff. But it is like that. You know, you spend so much time with the people that, you know, they do become a little bit of a family.
Yeah, it's a lot like the Lions, which I've experienced a bit over the past couple of years or so. Afterwards, after the match in the presidential suite, Nohal, they allow me in there with a t-shirt on.
Beautiful.
They sneak me in. But just a vibe, Kevin de Klerk and the players and the respect. Your game's over and now we're a happy family. It's an amazing, you know, you're out there, you have to win. But even if you lose, it's not about that. It's like, keep that whole thing going. And on Monday, you start all over again, right? But
that's what sport can do with people. That's the thing. No matter where you come from or, you know, what your background is, it's just the mutual respect for the game. It just unites you.
Okay, here's one more coming in here. I knew this was
going
to happen.
A couple of flashes going on there.
Yeah, they're flashing you. So I don't have to ask this question, and I wasn't going to do this. Barney, ask David whether his family of Kobus Visser, former rugby player, please, Loretta and Pretoria.
Yeah, I get that one a lot. To be honest with you, there is the whole far down the line, second cousins, aunt, uncle, but that's very far. I would say no, we're not family at all. No,
And have you met Kobus? Does he know you?
I haven't met him before. I've been a fan of his, so I've seen him at like the airport, and you go stand next to him and just see what a monster of a man he actually is. Yeah. But no, I've never met him before.
You must follow him on Twitter.
Is he a good one?
Yeah, brilliant. He's very outspoken. I fat ni nonsense ni.
Well, if I was that big, I also wouldn't.
Okay, so yeah, get those SMSs in. You could win that autographed T-shirt, 37942 at a cost of R1.50. David Visser, my in-studio guest. Nice SMSs coming in here. David, sterkte met jou toekoms in cricket en sterkte met jou loopbaan by die Titans. Een van die dae sal jy kaptein van die Proteas wees en ons volkslied by die Wereldbeker sing, Gerard van Groblersdal. You've got a big fan there, huh?
Thank you, Gerard. Yeah, Groblersdal, that's also a nice neck of my woods there.
Oh, really?
He spent a lot of time there playing cricket and everything over there, yeah. Good people out of that place. Got met some nice friends there.
Great. So then from high school, you had to decide, listen, I can't just play, as you said, cricket, you need something to fall back on, so you wanted to go and study. Which varsity did you go to?
I went to Tux University of Pretoria, yeah.
So did you go there a bursary to play cricket as well?
Not at all, no.
Oh, really?
To be honest with you, I kind of stayed out of school. You know, you have this notion of going overseas and wanting to go play there and everything. And I kind of wanted to go to England and go play there a little bit, just you know, club cricket, get some experience, all of that stuff. And my folks just didn't want any of that. They told me straight, listen, yeah, you will go to university and you will get a degree behind your name. We will support you as much as you want after that, but you will go and get a degree behind your name. And that is probably the best advice that I ever got in my life.
But were there any scouts out there? I'm sure they were when you were in matric or whatever. They watched you play and they said, well, do you want to come to Stellenbosch? There are always those cricket scouts, like the rugby scouts as well.
Yeah, I mean, when you play in the national weeks, you know, you've got the scouts and the, you know, selectors, all of that stuff. But, you know, again, who's going to come watch a game in Mpumalanga, you know? Who cares about playing, you know, who plays for Mpumalanga? So, you know, there were scouts, but they always used to watch the Gauteng against the Northerns and, you know, all of those big teams, yeah.
Yeah, it is sad, but if you look at what's going on there now with their rugby, most of the provinces are the big, it's like Western Province and the Sharks now and the Lions, they're buying those players and even the Bulls.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, I suppose if you look at the Cheetahs, great college, all those kids, you know, they play for the Cheetahs
school.
And then they've got nobody there that's famous. And all of a sudden, all these Cheetahs players, they buy them. So I think it's starting to happen with rugby now, Mpumalanga and whatever. So hopefully with cricket as well, that'll happen.
I must say there has been a couple of Mpumalanga guys who were in primary school there and then they get bought at Waterkloof Uffies, you know, like Heino Kuhn plays for the Titans also. He comes from Barberton and then went to Uffies. Little Funamava also comes from Witbank and then went to Waterkloof. So, yeah, it's starting to happen with the bigger schools.
Your first year at varsity, do you remember anything?
Yeah, I do. I remember it was a big city that I came to and, yeah, it was good fun.
Because the first year, I mean, you don't study, right? It's parties and meeting girls and joining in the rags and this and that. And
yeah, again, like I said, you know, like failing wasn't an option for me. It was a bit of partying and good fun and all that stuff. But, you know, I went to go study BCom accounting. I didn't graduate that, but I started off with that. So, you know, I knew it was going to be tough and hard work. So there was a little bit of partying, but also I knew that, you know, I had to knuckle down and focus.
Did you stay in the hostel?
No, I didn't. Oh, so. I had my own place, yeah.
So, yeah, it's amazing, like, from primary school already, well, high school, really, that discipline kicked in and you want to do something with your life. And I think it's got a lot to do with your teachers and your parents. I mean, they're still behind you and the discipline is there. And look at you today. I mean, if something happens to you, God forbid, that you can't continue your cricket career, you've got something else. And that's a good lesson for a lot of people in sport, youngsters getting involved in sport. Because if you look at some of the guys now in their 30s and 40s, one injury and they've only got matric or there's nothing else they can do, then they become commentators for television. I'm just kidding. Joel Strangs. No, I'm just you don't want to end up like that, really. You know what I mean? So at least you've got that, which is nice.
No, it is a scary thought. I mean, there can only be so many coaches and, you know, that's the easiest thing to go into after being a player is going coaching. But, you know, it's tough. I've seen a lot of guys after the sport, you know, not really know what they're going to do. And I must say, over the past few years, we have the South African Cricketers Association and they've been fantastic with this initiative where they kind of like, you know, if you want to go study, they get you bursaries and, you know, a lot of guys studying through UNISA and they really like, you know, pushing for the guys to get something behind their name because, you know, it is important and it's a tough world out there when you, you know, finish playing, you're out the spotlight and then all of a sudden you got to find a job and be a 9-to-5 working person.
Or work for SuperSport.
Could do that too.
Kobus Visa, you're listening. But Kobus did well with these restaurants and stuff.
Visa, I mean, North, man, yeah.
Do you remember 1995, Ellis Park, when we won the World Cup? Where were you?
We were still staying in Standerton then. I remember watching the game. And then I remember immediately after the game, We went to the shops quickly to go buy some more cool drink or something.
I couldn't remember what.
No, it could have been maybe a little bit of Coke for the you know the mix, but
nothing wrong.
I just remember you know driving in those streets and just yelling the cars hooting and flags flying out the window and you know and you knew that you know it was a special day.
How old were you?
Oh, I was 10. 95, yeah, I was 10.
Sure, and just watching that and you know, also you saw the green and gold, you know, and you saw Springbok rugby and you saw sport and did that also give you a little bit of, I want to be like that one day?
Yeah, definitely did. I think, you know, especially just coming back into international sport back then, you know, what, you know, that 95 World Cup did for us, you know, it made you believe again that, you know, South Africa can be one of the top sporting nations. And, you know, I'm pretty sure a lot of young kids will look back at that day and decide, you know, that's the day that I wanted to be a Springbok or I wanted to be, you know, represent your country. Because, I mean, I remember, you know, them singing the national anthem and that plane flying over the stadium. You know, I'm actually getting goosebumps thinking of it now again. You know, it's just, you know, we South Africans, we're proud of our country and, you know, you just, you know, you want that experience.
What did you think of Francois Pienaar as a captain, as a leader, and then that connection with Nelson Mandela as well?
I think, you know, I said earlier on, you know, I respected Hansie Kloonje and looked up to him as the type of leader that he was. But, you know, Francois was, he's phenomenal. What he did for the sport and for South Africa in general and to, you know, bring the country together like that. Mm. And, you know, the relationship that he had with the late Madiba, it's, you know, it basically defined what the Rainbow Nation was.
Now, the rise or fall of Hansie Kloonje, you're going to end up in that situation, hopefully not one day, where somebody's going to say, oh, maybe you have. So listen, miss five wides or whatever, or, you know, don't bat too well. I mean, and obviously you've been trained and your coaches and the whole of South Africa now, the coaches, they know. You've been conditioned not to even think about something like that. Your whole career will go down. And it's what, I mean, it's going to happen. Somebody's going to come up to you somewhere, I don't know where, and they're going to go or phone you or whatever, and you're going to go, it's very tempting, but on the other hand, look what happened. I mean, was that a big lesson for you, what happened to Hansie?
I think it was a big shock, first of all. You know, like I said, it was my idol. You know, I looked up at him, you know, I really enjoyed the way, the type of person that he was, you know, honest person, everything. And, you know, it was a shock, but I think that it was also a bit of an eye-opener to, you know, actually what does go on behind the scenes.
Barney and Friends. Barney Simon. Decorate.